Good evening, everyone, and welcome. This is the regular semi-monthly meeting of the Pacifica National Board Finance Committee, rescheduled from July 26th. My name is Tracy Rosenberg, and I am the chair of the committee. We're going to proceed according to the draft agenda that was sent out on August 1st to the members of the committee. I have one or two notes, which I will do in a chair report that will include a closed session summary and also a couple of procedural things. But before we get to that, if people could take a look at the draft agenda and let me know if there are any suggested modifications or if someone would like to move approval of the agenda.
A point of order, Madam Chair. We have to do the roll call.
Well, okay. You're right. Our fault. If you would.
Okay, Ken Aaron.
Here.
Jim Boyd.
Here.
Bill Crozier.
Here.
Campbell Johnson.
Here.
Kim Kaufman.
Here.
R. Paul Martin. Here. Tracy Rosenberg.
Here.
Alex Steinberg.
Here.
Barbara Whipperman. Warren Williams.
Present.
Bruce Wolf.
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum.
And Arlene Engelhardt is here, too.
You will note that for the minutes, R. Paul?
Yeah.
And also Brian Schaefer from the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Yes, he is here with us as a guest, as Andrew Phillips will be later on this evening. Go ahead. Arlene, did you want to say something?
No.
Okay.
Oh, it was me. It was Brian. I just said, hi, Brian, welcome.
Yes, Brian, hi, and welcome. And thank you for your patience with us while we just do about 10 minutes of housekeeping, and then we will move on to the archives budget. Okay. Apologies, R. Paul, for forgetting the roll call. We just have so much stuff on the agenda. I was eager to get going. So going back to the draft agenda that was sent out on August 1st, is there any commentary or modifications, or would someone like to move approval of that draft agenda? Would it be helpful for me to read it out loud, or?
Probably for those on the stream, probably.
Okay. Item 1, approve the draft agenda. Item 2, approve the minutes of July 12th. Item 3, approve the submitted minutes modification of May 24th, 2011. Item 4, a quick chair report from previous closed sessions. Item 5, act on proposed archives divisional budget. Item 6, act on proposed KPFT divisional budget. Item 7, act on KPFA LSB request for shared services discount. Number 8 is process pending waiver requests. The ones that I'm aware of are KPFA till August 20th, KPFK, and it looks like it will be longer than the August 17th LSB meeting, and we can talk about that, and WBAI, we need to inquire if they need a waiver. And then on item 9, set next meeting date, I am recommending that we go ahead and meet as scheduled on August 9th, and I'm happy to justify that when we get to it, but that'll be the last item. So that's the draft agenda.
This is Ken. I move to approve the agenda.
Are there any objections to approving the agenda? Woohoo, it's approved. Okay, that will take us to the minutes of July 12th, which was our last meeting. Our poll sent those out this morning, and they are posted at the Yahoo group. Would anyone like to move to approve those minutes from our last meeting?
So I move.
Okay, thanks, Kim. Are there any objections to approval of those minutes? And those are the minutes of July 12th. Okay, so approved. That brings us to the minutes modification that we had. These are previously approved minutes of May 24th, 11. Kim Kaufman, the KPFK treasurer, had informed us she was going to send in some modification to those minutes. She
and at long last, they arrived.
Yes. So while we did previously approve these minutes, because it took some time for the modification to come, what we're now doing is approving the addition of this new material to those minutes. So can I guess, have either a motion to approve this addition to the minutes, or a motion to approve it, or whatever?
Point of information?
Yeah,
would it be an addition or replacement? I mean,
I thought what you were doing was providing additional information on some particular items of those minutes.
No, I was basically rewriting them because he didn't kind of get down, like, the numbers or really what I was trying to say. I mean, I was kind of complicated what I was saying. I mean, I was writing them as these don't reflect what I said.
Okay, but did you do the entire minutes document from beginning to end? Because I don't remember. I thought you were just amplifying certain sections.
No, I think I was rewriting my whole section about my report.
Right, so what we're doing is we're replacing the section about your report with
yes.
the new text that you sent.
Oh, yes, only my report, right.
Right, that's what I meant. That's what
yeah.
I meant. So what we're approving is putting in that section.
Right.
Instead
right.
of what was there. But the
right.
rest of the minutes about the other stuff. Bam. You know, the
I know. I'm, it's all about me. It's all about me.
Okay.
This is Bill.
So is there... Yes, Bill.
Just point of information. Are these... Is this what you sent us on July 19th, Kim?
Probably.
Okay. There's nothing
I mean, I
later.
Could look up July 19th, but that sounds about right, like 2 weeks ago.
Me too. I'm pretty sure
okay.
it is.
Yeah.
I'm missing anything. All right. Yeah, they look okay.
Bill, would you like to go ahead and approve that minutes? I mean, make a motion for that minutes modification? Someone has to do that for the record.
Yeah, I move we accept Kim's modifications to the minutes that she sent on July 19th for the May 24th meeting.
Okay. Are there any objections to that?
Okay, who blew that? Bill, who blew that?
Bill has moved it.
Okay.
We're now waiting to see if we have any objections.
The form is, say, amend the minutes to be adopted.
Yes, it is to amend the minutes that were adopted for the May 24th, 2011 meeting. Okay, I'm not hearing any objections, so it looks like the minutes are heretofore amended. R. Paul, if you would cut and paste into the document what Kim
sent
and reissue them, that'll be great.
And thank you all very much for bearing with me.
We're patient.
Point of personal privilege before we continue. I hear an echo from
Bill
Crozier. I just heard myself echo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
me too.
And R. Paul is very muffled. Muted.
Okay. I make a motion that we all hang up and start over.
Oh,
no.
No? Okay.
No, the echo is usually because somebody has a speakerphone on.
This is Tracy. I am guilty of the speakerphone thing. So what I'm going to do for now is get off the speakerphone and let's see if that solves it.
I think it does.
Hold on. I haven't done it yet.
Oh.
Okay. Is this better?
It's the... The echo is gone.
Okay.
That's right. The echo is gone.
Yeah.
Then the answer is I was causing the echo, and I'm sorry, and I will try to take the call without using the speakerphone, at least for as long as I can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's Barbara just joined the call.
Hi, mm-hmm. Barbara. Welcome.
Thank you. Sorry for being late.
Okay. So at this point, we are going to move to the chair's report, which will be brief. As agreed, I'm going to report out on the previous two executive sessions. So I will go ahead and do that right now for the stream. The National Finance Committee met in executive session on June 28th, and we discussed contractual and legal issues. And on July 12th, we also went into a brief executive session and discussed contractual, legal, and real estate concerns. So for the record, that's what we did. The other procedural thing that I wanted to put out there is we'll be having guests with us tonight. Brian DeShazer from the Archives is on the call to present and answer questions about the Archives budget. We'll also be having Andrew Phillips on the call to discuss some of the KPFA stuff when we get to it, which will probably be well after 7 o'clock. What I would like to do procedurally, because I want to keep the capacity of the committee to discuss things candidly, and I also, and I certainly don't want to get staff in a position where they feel like they are participating in our back and forth. Because, of course, we're the board, we have an oversight function, they're the staff, they have a creation function, it's somewhat different. So what we're going to do is we're going to hear from our guests. We will do some question and answer, but for our voting process, we will, at that point, ask our guests to depart and go through that process as a committee. That's my recommendation for how we proceed, and I hope that's okay with everyone, but I'm perfectly willing to take feedback, and if it's the will of the committee to do it differently, that's fine. But that's what I'm suggesting as a procedure. And that's it.
A point of information from Ken. You're yep. asking the guests to leave the open meeting during the time that we're going to vote in open session?
Yes, they can certainly...
I don't understand that. What's the exigency of that? Why would that be functional?
They can
if it's
certainly...
An open meeting,
yeah, it's an open meeting, and our voting processes are transparent, and anyone on earth can listen to them, but that's a different thing than participating in the call as a participant, and my preference would be that the committee have some space to have discussion amongst the committee itself if needed. So I am suggesting that they not stay on the phone call during the final voting process.
My concern on that is that the discussion may bring us back to the point of getting point of clarification from the guests. So I'd rather not release them unless they don't have the time.
Just a second. Let me answer Ken, then I'll be right with you. This is not a request that's originating from any of our guests. It's originating from me, just to clarify. Who's next on the stack?
Alex.
Go ahead, Alex.
I think it would needlessly complicate things if we ask guests at an open session to leave. We have had precedents before where we've had guests on the meeting several times, and we never did that before. I don't really see the point of it, and I think it just complicates the meeting process needlessly.
Any other feedback?
Yeah, I would just like, this is Kim, I personally don't care. I suspect Brian would be happy to leave as soon as he can. But I don't,
Well, this is Brian, so I'll go ahead and speak for myself. I'd be happy to stay and see the voting process go through and commit to not participating in the conversation. If you do ask me to leave the call, I'll go back on the stream to listen into the discussion and the vote anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry for speaking of you, Brian. I'm sort of a joke, but,
Okay.
Well, I personally don't care. Whatever's,
Okay. Well, I don't want to spend an inordinate amount of time on this. I heard two strong objections. Is there anyone else who kind of wants to just straw poll what their opinion is so we can settle it one way or the other?
I'll put my opinion in under those circumstances. It seems that it wouldn't help, or there's no hindrance to having him just stay on the call. And
okay.
Ken's point about possible questions is relevant, I think.
Okay, I surrender. Wipe the suggestion. The committee has vetoed it, and we'll go forward on that basis.
So you don't need any more of a straw poll?
Well, it sounds like three people are kind of vetoing it. That's a pretty substantial chunk of the committee.
Yeah,
so under those circumstances.
Okay. You can ditto Campbell in for that, too.
Yeah, that's how it seemed to be going. All right. Okay, so that brings us into the next item on the agenda, which is the Archives Divisional Budget. You've all received it at least twice and hopefully have had a chance to review it. I think we'll start the process by asking Brian to talk to us a bit about some of the features of the budget, strong points, weak points, possible concerns, his feelings about the document. I'd like to keep it to under 10 minutes.
Procedural question, Madam Chair.
Okay, just one second. Yes, Campbell?
Yes. It would be so much more helpful in the presentation if we had the actuals to compare rate, you know, column by column from last year on this.
I believe those are on the budget template, aren't they?
I only see fiscal year 2012 budget and then the reconciliation budget.
Let me open up the document.
I don't see it that
way. I think it's
there.
It
doesn't look that way to me unless it's hidden somewhere.
Let me open it up. We have PRA.
I don't see it on mine.
Yep, on this document, you do not have that. LaVonne, could you email out the 20? Well, we have the 2010 actuals through. We have the actuals for this year through June. We've all received that. LaVonne, do you have a copy with the last three columns filled out, or do we need to open up the actuals?
Actually, his column shows the full year. He doesn't have it by month. But he shows his full year forecast on there.
What we're talking about is the previous year's actuals.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to pull it up here. I can't seem to pull it up.
See, we have cash flow. We have a reconciliation cash flow. We have central services fees. We have
I don't have a huge widescreen monitor, so, you know, if I have to open the other one and split the screen, it's going to be, you know.
Point of information, what's the name of the document?
Copy of PRA FY2012.xls.
Is it available on the website?
Are you talking about the current year proposed budget, or are you talking about...
No, just the budget.
Is it available on the website? I just emailed it to everyone today.
Okay. I don't know that I got it. All right, I'll check.
Okay. Brian, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Do you, could you sort of verbally talk us through when you're going through this document? The way in which the 2012 numbers compare to the year-to-date this year in the FY2010 audit? Because that's what people are expressing.
Right, that's exactly what I was going to do, but I was just going to go through the revenue and expenses and the overall budget, not a line-by-line item. I actually don't have that. I'm not sure if I have that in front of me or not, but we'll see what we can do. I think I know it well enough. But to present it, I was just going to look at, you know, FY 2011, this year, we had $580,977 in expenses, and with capital expenditures, it was $587,77, and our income was $510,589, which is less than a deficit of $77,088. I mean, there were some definite factors that sort of contributed to that, including decreasing of sales, CD sales to the public, the diminishing use of premiums from the archives during fund drives, but that's picking up a little bit. So And when we did a temporary hire, when we were expecting a CPB grant, that sort of took us over our budget there, too. But so this year, we have cut back and been very conservative in our budget. And from last year, expenses being 587, this year's budget is 569, 786. And if all goes well, we'll end up with a $35,943 surplus, which would be a one-month reserve for payroll. So when I say, like, if all goes well, sort of like a three-point mention of what sort of we expect in that budget is that, you know, as all goes well, that means the central services from the stations that are budgeted would actually be received. And usually in the third quarter of the year is when we run out of our listener support money and rely on central services, or if central services aren't flowing, a national office to cover the setback of central services. So that's sort of where we are with our expectations. And, of course, we've been really grateful to have LaBarne and Arlene there to work with us and work with us, and also the general managers to work with everybody in the network to achieve that. So I think that we've done really well in serving the mission, both in this past year, even with the deficit, serving multiple grants, searching out new grant opportunities, and doing our fundraise, including a summer fundraiser, three of them exactly. So we did three extra fundraisers last year, just the CRA staff to meet the need.
Right.
One of the second things that we sort of expect in this year's budget of 2012 is that listener support has been raised from $200,000 to $300,000. We're requesting a third day of fundraising. Usually we've done 2 days. This year we're asking for November 15th, 16th, and 17th. A week or so before Thanksgiving holiday, it's when we've historically done our fund drive, and it's been successful because we could deliver all the shipments and all the premiums before the holiday gifting season. By a specific holiday. And we've been able to achieve that every single year. And so we are working with the general managers and the program directors successfully to have an exciting and an engaging three-day fundraiser for the campus campaign, which is actually $300,000 is actually $65,000 more than central services. So in terms of balance, the archive staff and what we do with our product and our the materials that we've preserved through our own efforts and the grant-funded efforts that sort of push us through that have led us our own fundraising even more so than what the station's percentage has been. So that's just sort of a standing hurrah for us in the archives and our fundraiser. So that's sort of my overall presentation. And also that third point is that, you know, we expect in this budget that in order to serve the grant process and the preservation and the fundraising production, we expect that the staff would be maintained and that there would be no further cuts unless it was an emergency, and that we would have some other plans to continue the activities if we did need to make any layoffs or cuts. So we would hope that that wouldn't be the case, because we're still small and some crew with that. But in this, what's exciting is that we do the hire of two professional archivists that has, we do have two temporary archivists, science positions that are very important, have the ability to help us raise the level of our practices in the preservation world. So that's it for the moment, and I'll take questions or any clarifications and from there, I guess.
Okay. So I'll take a stack for sort of follow-up. I'm going to put myself on it. Who else would like to be on the stack?
Campbell?
Anybody else?
Ken.
Okay. Anybody else?
Bill.
Okay.
Marvel.
Okay. All right. So we'll start there. Campbell, you're up.
Okay. How you doing, Brian?
Good. All right, thanks.
Okay. As you know how
challenging things have been financially around the network, if there was a delay, or let me ask it this way, I guess, your projections on the central services from stations, do these projections for this year, for the coming year, do they reflect the result that occurred from last year, or if they're different, can you give me an explanation as to, you know, how what the sensitivity is?
Right. The central services is the same as it's always been, except for, I believe, LaVarne, you can speak to this, that KPFK is in their percentage a little bit from last year to this year. But I don't believe that that was changed by...
You're breaking up a bit, Brian.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. How's that? Is that a little bit better?
Could you repeat what you just said?
Let me try that. How's that?
Okay.
That's good.
That sounds good.
Okay. The central services, the percentage is the same, except for I believe KPFK has increased their percentage by 0.5% from last year. But I don't believe that there's any sensitivity or any challenge from any of the stations about it. Did that answer your question, or was there another part of that?
Well, I was just wondering if last year they came in the same sort of pattern that you have projected for the budget of 2012.
Right.
Okay.
Actually, those projections come from the station's budgets directly, so we don't make those up. I believe there's two stations that are pending, but Mariana projected them as best she could. And then when the two stations, which is, I think is WPFW and I can't remember the second one, when those two final numbers come in from their budgets, then the central services number will be adjusted accordingly.
Yeah, the thing I wanted to do is compare it with the actuals from last year.
I see. Yeah, I think that would have to come through the budget actuals form that they just were emailing out a few minutes ago.
Oh, okay.
I think we can answer your question in a follow-up if you'd like. I'd be happy to.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we're going to go to Ken, who's next on the stack.
If you could just explain to me, Brian. Hello, Brian. And if you could just explain to me what the listener support income is as opposed to sales to the stations. Is that through the Internet or...
The listener support. I'm sorry to interrupt, Ken. I think I got your question. The listener support line, which is the 300,000. I believe it's booked as 299,000. Is when we do our 3-day fundraiser in November. That's directly from those 3 days. The $70,000, 529, which is on top of the $300,000 in revenue. Does come from tape sales to the public, internet sales, premiums to affiliate stations, premiums to our own stations, which are increasing, and also then whatever else that we can do in terms of sales to the public. And there's a couple good good things that are moving along in those areas. One is that at the end of this month in August, we'll have an advertisement, a quarter-page ad in Mother Jones Magazine, which is an educational issue dedicated to academia. So we're promoting the campus campaign content, which has sort of been supported by Noam Chomsky and a bunch of professors that we have in the advertisement. And we'll also have our this year in February of 2012. We don't have projected in this, but I hope that this will sort of increase our sales and increase our income. Which is our first publication through City Lights Books. We have a book called Redefining Black Power, Reflections on the State of Black America, which was approved in over a year ago through the PNB, and the book is coming out in February. So City Lights has already put a pretty high priority on publicizing it. So we hope to receive, you know, an additional income from the royalties of the sales of the book. And it will be released, of course, in Black History Month during the presidential campaign. And it's I'm pretty proud of the work. You know, I wrote the foreword to it, and our BBC producer, a woman of color. Joanne Griffith is the editor, and Greg Ruggiero from City Lights is our main editor. And so far, it's going well.
Okay. No, what I was referring to is the February through September, $4,000 a month, a listener support. Is that just amortizing the monies from the fund drive as they come in?
Yeah, that's just the that's broken down from the sales to the public, like CD sales. They sort of break it down into a quarterly income, which I believe is about $16,000 a year. So the actual this year right now is $13,537 as of August today. So yeah, that's about right. $4,000 every quarter. Yep.
Okay.
All right. Next on the stack was Bill.
Okay. Hi. Thanks for being with us, Brian, and appreciate all the work you're doing. I know you still have a couple of people, I believe, who are doing are listed as development for your staff. Is that right?
No, we don't have any development staff.
Oh, okay.
If you want me to sort of run down the headcount, I can if you'd like. But I'm sort of like the development person.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll do that. And then I was going to ask you about grants, and I know you didn't project any income, but I was hoping somebody's looking for grants. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, we do have some grant opportunities that are pretty exciting. So basically, the sort of staff is made up of myself, who does the grant writing with our preservation and access coordinator consultant, Addie Gevins. So together we write the grants and also direct the preservation and access project, which is sort of how does it we balance the preservation work under the standards of archived full science, you know, the ML, the Masters of Library Sciences, and also what we do as a radio services to our stations and services to our affiliates. So that's always been an interesting balance to play. So that's sort of what our role is, and of course my role is in administration. Sean Dellis is our outreach coordinator and main administrator, who's sort of the point person for listener calls, station program producer calls, and is the point person for requests of any and all kind. It also works with our affiliates, our website, and all the data entry for the fundraiser, and our customer service dude. Mariana Berkovicic, our business manager, who, is – so if I didn't have her, I wouldn't be here. Forget about it. She's awesome. Mark Torres is senior producer and operations director, and he produces from the vault and does most of the digitization of – some of the digitization of the actual tapes in-house, and helps us sort of run things and makes our equipment work. And Edgar Toledo is the production coordinator, who does actually the majority of the in-house digitization of our analog reel-to-reel tapes, keeps stock of our digitized materials, and does all the duplication for all the station requests, our fundraisers, our listener requests, our scholar requests, and all of that. And he also sort of manages all the volunteers that come in to help him out, from shipping and packing to reshelving tape. And then new to our staff this year are two professional archivists who have degrees from New York University and UCLA, Jolene Beiser and Joe Gallucci, who really have been incredible in completing our deliverables from our National Endowment for the Arts grants. And working through preparing for new grant proposals that we've been completing this year. Whoosh. So I'll take a moment, take a breath there if there was any questions, and then I'll move on to the grant summary.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Okay, Barbara, you're on the stack.
Okay.
Brian, continue.
Okay. So in terms of grants, we're in the middle of a National Endowment for the Arts grant, and we're getting ready to send 150 tapes to Philadelphia for digitization, and when they get back, they'll be made accessible to the public on a stream online. Our previous grant that we're actually completing our final report this week, which was also funded in part by the National Endowment for the Arts, and when we did that the November fundraiser, that's when we raised the matching funds for the NEA grants. So that's very important to us,
that we have a secured way of presenting to the panel that will have the matching funds. And they're usually $15,000 to $20,000, the NEA grants. So just in a few days or in a week or so, you'll see hundreds of recordings being made available on the Archives website thanks to the NEA grant through streams, audio clips, and be able to purchase online. And so we'll do a little promo for the radio station, and that might increase our visibility in any case. And in terms of in our next grant, like I said, the NEA grant is a $20,000 grant, but a $56,000 project, which will get that'll be finished May 2012. So that crosses the bridge of this 2011 budget and the 2012 budget. We did apply for or worked with some grant organizations, the National Historical Publications and Records Administration, the National Archives, a few rounds in some grant projects that just didn't fit. We couldn't make the budget and the deliverables and the requirements all work together. They're very large grants. They were $100,000 to $200,000 grants. And then we couldn't match the, and it is a 50-50 match, so we would have to come up with $200,000 in either an in-kind match or, and actually what they like less is a cash match. So we've been working it out, and the good news is that we just turned in today our preliminary proposal to the NHPRC, which I just said the full title of what that was. The NHPRC, it is a, we're asking for $182,000 for a $365,000 two-year project, and that we have figured out, we've made all the workings fit. You know, the proposal looks good, the budget looks good, and again, through the budget that you're looking at in 2012, it will work. That fits. You know, our staff is set. We know what everybody would be doing if we get this $182,000 grant. And what we'll accomplish with that big grant is preserving, identifying, and make accessible the women's movement, 1963 to 1982, and the materials represent all five Pacifica stations. And there's 2,350 hours of tapes that have already been identified in this category for this very specific, very important grant. So we're really excited to already put the preliminary proposal in. In terms of how that applies to the budget, what you're thinking already. October 1st is the deadline when we actually put the proposal in formally. Right now we're getting preliminary feedback notes from the grant officer at the NHPRC. When we get those back at the end of August, we'll revise the proposal, tighten it up, make it shiny and new, and then we'll, as long as Arlene and LaVarne approve that proposal, then we'll go ahead and include it in the budget, as it applies to the 2012 and the 2013 budget. And then we should know what that budget grant means. Whoosh. All right, I'm done with that.
Okay. Thank you. Take a breath. We will move on to ARPOL.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
Okay.
Some of what I was going to ask already done. Let me just...
ARPOL, you're incomprehensible. Do something else.
Too much noise and static.
Can you hear me now?
Not well.
Wow. Oh, okay, I'm right up against the thing here. Okay, just fast then. Line 37, net income. So you're expecting to finish FY12 with about $39,000 clear, right?
Yeah, the 2012, as it stands, we would have a surplus of $35,943. And I would expect that would be better based on the possible royalties from the book sales and some increased visibility from Mother Jones. And we're actually working with the Nation Institute on releasing Radio Nation recordings, which would also get us some added income.
Okay, that was easy. Okay, last person on the stack is Barbara.
I now have two questions, but they're quick.
Wait, I was on mute, and I was before Barbara, but I'll go after her, but please don't forget me.
Okay, I'm sorry, Kim. I forgot you. You can go after Barbara.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to go back to when you were first listing the staff, Brian. You said Addie Givens was a consultant on preservation and what else?
Preservation and access.
Access.
And that's just sort of the formal title of what preservation mission is.
Okay.
Right.
And then the other thing is the total amount of this big grant, NHPRC grant, what was that for?
We would be requesting $182,000.
$182,000, okay.
Right, and the matching money or in kind, the project would be $365,000 spread over 2 years.
With the matching, it's 365.
Right, with the matching, it's spread over 2 years, pretty much split half and half. What else was I going to say about that? I think that's all I wanted to say about
that. That's impressive. Okay, thanks.
Okay, Kim, you're next.
Okay, first up is, what is this with KPFK increasing their central services a half a point?
LaVon, do you want to go ahead and weigh in on that? If I'm wrong, please correct me, but I believe that they increased it by 0.5% this year sometime.
Can you hear me? This is LaVon.
Yes, we can.
Okay. I think last year it was that percentage was changed. We don't know why, so we changed it back to where it was before last year.
So it's corrected.
It's up or down?
It changed, but it was.
Up or
sounds
down?
Like sounds like it's up.
Yeah, up.
No, she says it went down, and then we turned it, changed it back up.
Yeah,
good.
We don't know why it was changed. It was one of those little things, errors that you make in your form list.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Was that your whole question, Kim?
No.
Okay.
What is, how realistic is the CPB in there? I mean, we don't know yet what our CPB is, correct? Nobody does.
He doesn't have CPB in there.
Oh, I thought I saw a line item. Okay.
Yes.
So what capital expenses? You said you had capital expenses?
That's just sort of a basic percentage of equipment and permanent things that you get during the year. It's kind of a standard thing you add to each budget each year. You take a percentage of some number, and that's what is standard. Is that right, LaVarne? Please correct me if I'm wrong.
On this is something I'm glad you brought that up, Kim, because what we're doing is we're going to have to really look and address our capital budget for each unit. And that Brian actually has a very small amount in here, and it's basically computers, which really, we would expense those items, so it really wouldn't be capital. But, again, just want you to know, I know Bruce is looking at his, and we're looking at, and you've looked at the numbers with KPFT. We're going to have to, what I'll have to do is show the capital budget is shown on the cash flow part of your budget, and we're going to have to show that there, and then perhaps have another sheet in this budget for these capital items, because we do have major capital expenses due to the moves and the capital campaigns that are being planned to support those moves.
But that doesn't affect PRA, right?
Not substantially.
Really inconsequential. He only has $3,400 on here.
Oh, okay. Then I would think, now you, I'm not sure whether actually I'm looking at 2011 or the 2012 because I'm kind of bopping back and forth. But I see $10,000 for fund drive expenses. That's high relative to what we spend for fund drive expenses.
Well, I can certainly explain it and break it down for you, but that includes the premiums, like the actual product that we send out.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So our $200,000 to $300,000 income, $10,000 is relatively low, particularly when it includes the premium product.
No, absolutely. But we have two line items in our budget: one for all the premiums, and then one just for fund drive expenses,
okay.
like food for volunteers and that stuff, and I'm thinking, wow, you got 3 days and you're spending $10,000? Wow, what are, you know.
So that's a classification, classification thing.
So is there $10,000 of fund drive expenses, as I saw in a line item, I thought? Or did I read something wrong?
Yeah, there is, including premiums, right?
Yeah. I see. Okay. There was a duplicating machine the KPFK bought. Did that ever find its way up to PRA?
I think it did.
Okay. Okay. I guess the only other thing I want to say is, okay, so you're adding one day to the National Fund Drive for all our stations, correct?
That's correct.
For this year. Yeah, I mean, that's just something we're looking carefully at relative to how many days we're in Fund Drive, whether for you or for us. One day more for you, you know, is just one day more, and we're already, like, doing a lot. So I'm not going to say yay or nay, but it's a very large consideration on my radar. Now, the answer, I'm just bringing it up in case anybody has any thoughts about this.
Okay.
And I think that's about it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. This is Tracy. I had put myself on the stack, and at this point, I think I'm going to go, unless there's anyone else who hasn't spoken who wants to. Okay. I guess it's safe to proceed. So let me ask my question, and then I would like to move on to a motion. The question, Brian, is basically for you. And, I mean, of course, we want to budget in an optimistic and functional manner in terms of expecting that shared services obligations will be paid as scheduled. But I think we do need to acknowledge that, our East Coast station, WBAI, can't always make those goals, although hopefully they're getting closer and closer all the time. And the Washington station will be going through a major move, and they have certainly some cash flow challenges around that. So the question that I guess that I have, which was sort of asked, but I'll just kind of ask it again, is if the worst happens and the cash flow gets somewhat interrupted and you have somewhat less cash to work with than you're hoping, do you have sort of a contingency plan or areas of flexibility in the budget? I understand you've got a $35,000 surplus plan, so there is some there, and that there's also the possibility of some royalty income and some grant income that you're not totally counting on but might come in. Do you have any other sort of insight about where the ability to sort of adjust course on this budget might be if you're facing a slightly tougher financial scenario than the one that we're all hoping to see? And other than that, I think this is a pretty sound budget. But I just wanted to kind of hear your thoughts on that.
That was a good summary. You put those in order very well. Thanks. So, yeah, jumping off of that, I think, one of the things in February of 2012 with the release of the book and the publicity is that when we were at the NFCB conference in San Francisco, we worked with the affiliate stations. And because the book is Pacifica, published in tandem with Pacifica Radio and City Lights, we get to use the book in our station fundraisers. So the premium is intended to raise funds for the stations, which, of course, we get a percentage, a higher percentage return on it because it's our product. So it increases our royalties. But also the affiliate stations have already agreed to have special fundraisers for the archives, with Joanne Griffith going over to do book signings at a local bookstore, and with our affiliate stations already committing. We have three stations already committing to doing a fundraiser for the archives, based on the release of the book and special broadcast and our From the Vault series. One of them is WRT in Madison, Wisconsin. One of them is in Washington State, and I can't remember. It's Rip Robbins' station. Mm-hmm. And the other one is in, I believe, Amherst, Massachusetts. And the other one, I think, is WMNF, Arlene. So we have a number of stations that are already sort of waiting to talk to our publicity person from City Lights to set up the fundraising events. But, you know, until I really sort of see something happen or on paper, I don't want to project any income. But as soon as we see something that's projectable, we will definitely do it. But, yeah, I think that we've got sort of a plan B with the surplus, the plan B with the extra income that we are sort of keeping our eye on, but really can't project at this time. And then, of course, the third plan C is the archives team come together. We're very experienced in pulling our bootstraps up and doing community events or anything that we might be able to push through to increase our income. I think the other positive is that this is the first year that we've had real GM, not interim general managers at the stations, and they're working really well together. We have an executive director that, you know, and Arlene's fantastic. That's all I'm saying. And it really seems like a network. And I believe that, you know, I have confidence in the stations, even with the hard times that they're having, that we can work together to both raise funds for them as well as visibility and funds for the archives. Because I have learned over the 13 years I've been here, if there's anything that nobody is really contentious about or opposes, is the preservation of the history of this network. I'm really looking forward to this year, and I got to say that I have not been able to say that many times going into a new year at Pacifica, but this year I can say I'm very enthused about the year.
Okay. Thank you. That was a good answer. Well, at this point, I'm willing at least to throw out a motion that the national... Ken, let me finish my sentence. Then I'll get to you, I promise. But I'm going to throw out a motion that the National Finance Committee recommend this budget on to the full PNB. With that, we'll go to whatever stack we have, and Ken is next.
Campbell for the stack.
Okay, Ken, go ahead. Okay, got you. Ken, you're on. Ken? Okay, well, I think maybe we lost him. So let's go to Bill, and then we'll go back.
Okay. Thanks again for the comments, Brian. I did look on, I forget who was asked, Barbara or somebody, about the fund drive expenses, and I see under development expenses in your budget, you do have $15,000 for premiums from PRA, and then there's the $10,000 fund drive expenses, and then another $10,000 for premium packaging shipping. So maybe that fund drive expenses is something else. But, I mean, that's okay.
Right. I appreciate that. I can tell you that there is a little bit, it might seem higher for one reason that it sort of packaged the, actually this budget is different from past years, is that working with EFRIN, they really did work to identify every element of that fundraiser broadcast and turn it into this expense for the fund drive. So we did see a major change in what the expenses looked like. But I can tell you it has been, I think in the first two or three years, it was up to $50,000 in expenses because we needed, you know, three producers to fly from KPFA to help us out. We didn't know, you know, we were archivists. I was a director. I didn't do national simulcast production. But over the years, we've learned to cut our expenses from $54,000 down to close to $6,000 to $7,000 or less. We do get at least one producer to help us with cuts. If you really require it, I'm happy to send a larger breakdown and an explanation of why we do what we do. Sometimes we pay for a publicity person to do some get some press releases out. Copy and print magazines or newspapers. Sometimes this has been successful. So anyway, I'll stop there. If you require it, I'll be happy to break it down.
Okay. And I had another second question. Is it okay, Tracy? Okay. This is something we talked about, I think, last year at the meeting or the LA meeting. Idea, and I'm not sure but. If you do a random say on your website,
there's an incredible echo.
I can't hear.
Okay, let me try something else. Sorry, I was... Okay, let me put my headset on. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Apologize. I was muted and I came back on. This is a potential source of income, and I assume the problem is still labor, but, you know, if you look for some historical figure in your search function on your website, most of what you get usually is, like, it'll say tapes, reel-to-reel tapes. So I assume these are all not digitized, and so they're not really available until they're digitized. Is that right? Because it doesn't list availability or how to get them or what they would cost.
Right.
Unless
I know
something
exactly
from the vault. Yeah.
Can I hear?
I have a bad habit of interrupting when I think I understand what the question was. Pardon me. But my assessment of our website is it's certainly not a marketing website. And the conundrum with the Archives website is that we have to present it as a collection that for researchers and for educational purposes. And our database of records of what we have on reel-to-reel is sort of an internal locked system. And the website on the whole that has sort of like a shopping cart and then maybe a page that you could create that sort of tells you what you can buy, those really have not been bridged together or married. So each grant that we do and each year that we put enough grant money in to improve those elements one step as we sort of follow technology. Actually, the good news is that we're shooting for merging the database from the vault broadcast site and the materials that have been digitized in a way that the user can listen to a clip, listen to a stream, download it, the whole program for 99 cents. If you want to license it for a new broadcast, you click over here. And also, if you can find something that's not digitized, you send a letter in to request for it to be digitized, and it's a new price. So we're really working to sort of improve that, and we're really having to rely on our grant funding to sort of take us one step further into that, because we don't have a webmaster on staff, and we don't have any money in our budget to pay the kind of fees that would require to do that kind of level of work. But I definitely understand your concern, and we've got it on our radar to improve it as best we can with the resources we have.
Okay, thanks, because I know that could be an income source, too.
Okay. Thank you. We're almost there. We're almost there. Like I said, in a few weeks, we should have 150 that would be available, again, for purchase, for download, and for listening in a stream or listening to a two-minute clip.
Okay. This is Tracy. Before we continue with the stack, I'm just going to do a time check. We are substantially past the time that we had allocated, and we have a lot on this agenda. So I'm going to ask people to keep their comments as short as possible and hope that we can get to an action within 15 minutes or so. That said, Ken is next on the stack. If he's here, and I guess he's not. Ken?
Yes, I'm on. I'm here, but
okay.
I had no question. I did have one. If it's not quite on the budget, do you produce any flash drive material for sale? And if you
yes, we do. The advertisement in Mother Jones magazine that's coming out at the end of this month, it's the September October issue, is a jump flash drive, and it would have the campus campaign materials that are dedicated and rendered for academia. So, yeah, it's actually a jump drive instead of CDs.
And it's produced out of house?
It's produced in-house.
Produced in-house. Okay, and one last thing. I didn't notice on there, are you paying for web hosting? And are you paying any fees for the shopping cart and web hosting?
We are paying for web hosting. I think it's really minimal, like $50 a month or something. It's something that we've been looking at. We probably could find a better host. I'm not so sure we could find a cheaper host. But, you know, we're satisfied with where we are right at the moment. But, you know, as we do improvements, we always look at those things, too.
But do you have to pay for the shopping cart function?
No. Actually, we did an open source version of it that doesn't give us a lot of the bells and whistles that you come to expect in the shopping cart. But we really didn't want to jump into that yet until we had a lot more content to add to the catalog.